Well, good morning, everybody. It's great to see so many people here. And I want to start by letting you know that Harley Davis is a student whose work I'm presenting, and she couldn't make it today. So I'm happy to be here in front of you and talking about some of the things that we've done. Suzanne McDermott and I are part of a larger grant, PI, Suzanne McDermott, who's at the University of South Carolina in Columbia. And that was also where I was for the majority of my time. And I'm going to be talking about a study that was really done in South Carolina. And to give you a little bit of background and what we're trying to do, one of the things that we're trying to do is really look at heavy metals in residential soils. And most people are smart enough to decide that they're going to go and look at where the soils are really contaminated and then do some kind of health assessment based on the fact that you have high concentrations, and we're doing the opposite, which makes it a little bit difficult for us. But on the other hand, we know that heavy metals are associated with a lot of negative health impacts, and we don't know that much about what are the threshold concentrations, what do we get exposed to just in our everyday lives, and in addition, what about prenatal exposures and the impact that that might have on the children. So one other thing that, for those of you, I thought it was, we just had terrific opening sessions yesterday, where people are really talking about certain parts of the country that have more poverty than other parts of the country. So right now I'm currently in Massachusetts, which is a little bit different than South Carolina in a lot of ways that you might anticipate. But we also know that there are a lot higher minority populations in a place like South Carolina versus Massachusetts, and people of low socioeconomic status. And we were interested in a larger grant looking at some of the factors. And I'm going to be using the U.S. government terms for some of these populations, non-Hispanic black and non-Hispanic white, and we will focus more also on the environmental aspects of the study. So some of the things that we were wondering about is, we all know when talking about how expensive it is to do some of these analytical measures, when you're trying to get to really low concentrations, things get more and more expensive, and it also gets fewer and fewer people or laboratories who can actually analyze these things. So one of the things that we've been looking at is spatial interpolation. Can we actually use other kinds of systems to try to get at these concentrations in the environment? And are there proxies that we can use? And in this case, we were trying to look at something as generic as land use. So what we did is we spatially interpolated some arsenic, barium, and lead concentrations, and we focused on those three metals because they are a range, they represent a range, barium being naturally occurring. Arsenic also has a really significant natural component, which people may not think about often, but also has the anthropogenic component, and lead that's primarily anthropogenic, associated a lot with roads, and we've heard just in the previous talk. And then the associations that we were interested in is looking at land use codes, and that's the Anderson land use codes, and also availability of large databases like the census measures of race and ethnicity and SES. So this is, I mentioned, part of a larger study. We sampled 10 areas in South Carolina, and those areas were chosen based on a health outcome, which was intellectual disability and developmental delay in children of women, moms, giving birth while enrolled in Medicaid. In South Carolina, I mentioned, it's a pretty poor state. About half of the children are actually born into poverty in the state. And what we were, I don't want to say lucky, but what this allowed is that our study had about 100,000 mom-baby pairs throughout the state, which is a pretty good number when you're looking at these associations. And in the areas, again, were chosen strictly on the IDDD. So in these people, again, the opposite of community-based participatory research, we were not allowed to know who they were or where they lived. They didn't participate in any way, and we had confidentiality agreements. So we collected these 120 samples about over 10 areas and analyzed them using inductively coupled plasma optical emission spectrometry, ICP-OES, and analyzed. In addition, we had other chemicals, but I'm just talking about those three chemicals. And then for the land use designations, we actually used USGS data for these Anderson land use. We identified block groups associated within each sampling area, overlaid these land use codes, and calculated the percentages of each land use that were associated with our block groups, and then weighted that over the entire site or area of the 10 areas. We used our data that we did collect, and we spatially interpolated across the block groups for the sampling areas. And we calculated an estimated mean arsenic, barium, and lead concentration for each block group and then averaged over the sampling area. And we also calculated the percentage of the block group population that was non-Hispanic black and had an income of 0.5 of the income to poverty ratio. Okay, which, I mean, when you think about $12,000, it's really pitiful how even the poverty level seems to be so inappropriate. But even within that, we cut that in half to even sort of a greater level of poverty, and that was, again, averaged. So what we did is we compared the mean estimated concentrations that we found of the metals, the land use percentages, and the population demographics between these sampling areas to see if there were differences. And I will tell you, even though I can't show a map where these areas were located, they really span the state of South Carolina. And for those of you who don't know where South Carolina is, you start at Florida, you move up to Georgia, and then you move up to South Carolina. It is a coastal state, which we'll talk about. And we used regression analysis with those three, with land use as a category, as a dependent variable, adjusting for metal concentration and population demographics. And we also did the same thing for the metals. One other quick note is that, for those of you who don't know South Carolina, there are different geological regions as well from what we call the coastal plain and low country, right about in the middle of the state to the heading west up into the Slate Mountains. And there have been different populations historically who have reside in those areas. So to give you a little bit more information about the specific sampling areas, of the 10, we had 5 rural areas and 5 urban areas. So we just designated, they have odd numbering system, but you can see that the approximate areas are about the same. The smallest one is U5, urban area 5, with 60 square kilometers, and they got a little bit bigger, 130, urban area 4. But the number of block groups, of course, differs because that's based on population as defined, again, by the government. So in general, the urban areas had much higher number, greater number of block groups, as high as 99. And then the rural areas, you know, 3 of them are between 10 and 12, and there's only one that's a little bit larger. So the other thing to remember is there are a lot of urban areas, of course, that people focus on, like New Orleans, but there are a lot of rural areas across the U.S., and including areas like South Carolina. It really is highly rural. So the population growth, I mentioned that we have a coastal state, and you can see that, and this is just population growth over a 2-year period, it generally, the urban areas, like the rest of the U.S., have some migration to those areas and migration out of the rural areas. And also, some of that migration to the urban areas may be more focused on, in the south, people migrating for the warmer weather, maybe to the coastal areas, but which might give you a little bit of an indication, you know, when you have a 4.3 increase in population growth versus a -4 decrease in population growth in some of these rural areas. In terms of these land use covers that we were looking at, they're not the same. Even though sometimes people focus rural and urban, they're very different kinds of rural areas and different kinds of urban areas as classifications. And so in this case, there were significant differences. Rural areas 2 and 3 were predominantly forested, whereas 6 and 23 were predominantly to let you know, when we're talking, some of these land uses were lumped together, so all the forested areas. The land use categories get very specific, and we categorize them and group them, so cropland with several different types of cropland. And other, just to let you know, which can be significant, especially in some of these urban areas, includes water and wetlands. Some of the other areas that are other barren land, we don't have rangeland, we don't have, but would be important in other parts of the country. So we did see associations with land use cover percentages with a significant difference of P equal less than 0.05. And in the urban area, there was only one significant difference with residential land in urban area 5. And some of these urban areas, even though they're classified as urban, they actually have mixed use of land. So as you can see, we'll disregard other because people aren't living in the water, but some, a few might, but not so many on the ocean side anyway. There are a lot of rivers in South Carolina as well. But you can see that there are other categories. Even when you have urban, there's a lot of other kinds of land use that might be people think about as being part of a rural area. So when we looked at some of the metal concentrations in demographic areas, so these, you would look down the columns, was arsenic greater in any particular location than other location? And it turns out for arsenic, we did have higher residential. So again, these were selected with no sense of environmental contamination, industries, or anything. It was just based on the intellectual disability, developmental delay classifications of the children of these moms. And there were generally higher, and these are still pretty low concentrations, though, milligrams per kilogram dry weight of soil. And with barium, which is naturally occurring, we have one significant in rural area, two, oops, in the, sensitive mouse, I guess I have heavy fingers, I'll have to point to the slide. Lead had some much higher concentrations. In general, the concentrations were higher in the urban areas and rural areas, which is what we expect. And lead has the association with the roads. When you look at the populations of individuals, you can see that we have some, it was for the 100,000 mom baby pairs, about 50% non-Hispanic blacks and 50% non-Hispanic whites. And significant, but there were lot ranges in these numbers. So this, there was a significantly higher concentration in urban area 31 of 76% African American. And even in the rural areas, you can see the percentages range from about 38 to 68. So this is a pretty mixed community. The ITP ratio of less than 5, there were two significant areas, one in rural area 23 and one in an urban area 22. But that's a pretty high ratio of individuals, percentages of individuals who are living at 0.5 ITP. So in some of our sites, there were no block groups without individuals at a level of ITP less than 0.5. So that means that people are distributed. Really, the poverty is distributed across our block groups, across the sites. So when we did some of the regression analyses, just to quickly go through the three things that we were looking at, metals and land use, we found that lead was positively associated with commercial land. We found some of these associations, I won't read them all, but you could see one association. So there weren't associations with 5 or 10 of the sites. Arsenic, which again is naturally occurring and anthropogenic, was positively associated with industrial land, but and negatively associated with that same site for residential land. So that's kind of what we would hope for, that we actually have the industry, people aren't really being impacted as much by any, some of these industrial sources. And barium, negatively associated with commercial land in area 22 and industrial land, and positively associated with forested land. So that actually seems reasonable because it's a naturally occurring element, so you'd think that that makes sense. In terms of the land use and population demographics, when we did the regressions, non-Hispanic black population percentages were positively associated with residential land in one of the rural and one of the urban areas and with commercial land, and negatively associated with cropland and forested land. And it's interesting because there are a lot of non-Hispanic white populations in the rural areas of South Carolina, and so that kind of shows up in some of these associations. And unfortunately, the rural areas tend to be really economically disadvantaged. The ITP ratios, population percentages, were positively associated with some of the commercial land and industrial land, which gets a little bit to that issues of where people are living. And I will tell you, in one of the larger cities, there are populations that were really integrated into these industrial sectors. And now those industrial sectors are closing down, and they're actually making an effort to revitalize the areas away from those industrial sectors, and then negatively associated with commercial lands. In terms of metals and population demographics, in the regression analyses, the really strongest association we found was lead in the percentage of non-Hispanic black populations. And that occurred in 5 out of 10 of our sites. And 3 of them being urban and 2 being rural. So there aren't really things that you can say about urban versus rural. Some of the classification designations give you a little bit more richness of data. Arsenic and barium has some negative associations. In the ITP, it was less clear. And I'm going to go through some of the limitations because it was associated in different directions. So even though there were 2 associations, one was positive and one was negative. Okay, so it was not as clear. And finally, for the last conclusion slide, I believe, in terms of just the land used as a proxy for metal concentrations, just some of the conclusions that we have looking at these different data sets and regression analyses is that we feel pretty secure in saying that anthropogenic metals, primarily the arsenic and lead, did have higher concentrations in those urban areas. And again, they're residential, though, urban areas and positive associations with the commercial and industrial lands, and that barium had higher concentrations in both urban and rural and positive associations with the forested land. So the land use is helpful. The land use in terms of associations between land use and population, we felt there were certainly greater numbers of associations with race and ethnicity than there were with SES. And so I think that we found that in other studies as well. And in general, we found some of that the residential and commercial lands were more positively associated with higher percentages of non-Hispanic black populations. And croplands and forest lands were negatively associated with higher percentages of non-Hispanic blacks. And that might be more specific to certain regions of the country, again, where rural individuals have populated historically. The conclusion with the associations between population demographics and metal concentrations is, again, we found more associations with race and ethnicity than with SES, greater numbers. And we found, again, that lead was consistently positively associated with these higher percentages. Well, we know that there are limitations to what we're doing, and some of them are listed here. These Anderson land use codes were developed by the U.S. Geological Survey in about 1980. So when you have recent land use changes like we do with our population demographics, it's not going to impact so much those rural areas. If people leave, it's still going to be rural. As a matter of fact, it'll probably get more rural with more forested land or cropland potentially. But with the urban areas, that's going to be a big change. And even though those data were digitized more recently, that's a big undertaking to do these classifications by the USGS. We used, and so our results could be different or even better, we hope, because we would have more, I think, in those urban areas, more commercial, industrial land, more residential, so have greater distinctions because ours weren't so distinct. The Krieg metal concentrations, we Krieged their estimates. We had our over 1,000 real points, but we also Krieged over the block group. But Krieging is using ArcGIS as a pretty standard method, so we feel pretty comfortable. We've done validation of some of the Krieging methods. And then the population and location of the study. Now, this is very interesting because you start with a certain population, Medicaid women. It's not a population that exists all over the country in terms of this number. But on the other hand, the sites we selected were across the state. And even though the individuals were lower socioeconomic status, these kind of data are more representative not just South Carolina or our small areas, but of a lot of regions, specific regions, I think, in the U.S. So this kind of population would be pretty typical of South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, I mean, all the way going across the Gulf where we are now. Might not work as well in places like Massachusetts that has higher income, you know, Northern Virginia, D.C. area. Certainly there are populations, but not as large. And in terms of the study location itself, where we're not able to know the women, that has limitations, of course, because we want to be able to follow up, in which we're trying to do in our next research areas, to really go into biomarkers, having biological samples, having the for example, death samples within the home. And we couldn't do any of that with this population. But on the other hand, we were able to have a grid over a large area, take a lot of soil sampling, and focus more on the environmental aspects of a study like this as a starting point to follow up with a more epidemiological study. And biomarkers that we've heard some really great talks about their use. So thank you very much. And I will just quickly acknowledge the funding by the NIHS for the grant. We had several students besides Harley, Benjamin, Jason, Melissa, Sumit, and Frank, who helped with the soil sampling, and also Drs. Andrew Lawson and Bo Kai, who were part of the original grant, who did a lot of that kriging, spatial kriging, to identify the initial locations, study locations. Thank you.
For one short question, does anybody have it? Go ahead.
Okay. So that was a really interesting presentation. The strategy seems to be looking at associations at an ecological level to see whether it's sufficient to replace, if you will, individual level studies. How can we say that it's there's enough associations there to really address the ecological misclassification, et cetera, because basically block movements are still huge. You mentioned right at the end that you've done some validation studies, but presumably about variation and metal
right.
within block movements. But there still seem to be huge populations across
right.
geographic areas.
And I think that's why we didn't get so many associations, because of the variation across the really just what you said, and I think we didn't get the associations with SES because of the variations on the one hand, and also the lack of variation in terms of our population on the other hand. And so to really get down to that level, we're going to have to go and get more detailed level on the individuals. So you're right, we did a validation of the Bayesian kriging. We actually predicted what the concentration would be. We went out and resampled, and we matched, and then we determined how close they were, and it worked pretty well, but not in all cases. So even on the ecological side, it didn't work well where we had low and non-detect levels. So the kriged estimates were not that close in that case, but they worked well as you got higher levels. But if you're trying to look at really low levels and potential impacts, then there's a limitation. But you're right, there is a lot of variation, and some of these areas are large. Block groups are 600 to 3,000 population numbers, so they can be really large geographically in these rural areas especially. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.